On March 1st, police here in Los Angeles responded to a call in a place called Skid Row, a place right in the middle of downtown LA where thousands of homeless people and people with mental illness and drug addiction live on the street, in tents, or in subsidized one-room apartments. The police approached a man named Charlie Lundeau Kanang. He went by the name Africa. That day, Africa fought the police. Somebody standing nearby started filming. You might have seen this video, because here's what happened next. Police say Africa was grabbing for an officer's holstered gun. Africa's friends say he was mentally ill, on drugs, and having an episode. Either way, three officers fired shots, and Africa died. We've seen a lot of these shootings lately. An unarmed black man or kid killed by police. When it happens, there are often two sides to the story. The police version and the victim's version. And it's hard to get either one. The police won't talk because the cases are under investigation. And the victim is dead. So we decided to get as close as we could to these two sides, the police and the people who live on Skid Row. We wanted to understand the disconnect between the two. And when I say we, I mean me and my colleague, producer Tom Dreisbach.
Now, our plan was to be embedded with the police and with the people on the streets.
Right. So I started out by walking around Skid Row about a week after the shooting. And let me just say, it is an intense place. It's basically a tent city. There are thousands of people just hanging out on the sidewalk. Some people are drinking and doing drugs. Other people are just sleeping. People told me they were really upset about the shooting, but they did say the police were trying to do more to connect with the community.
Then we went to the police, the LAPD, and asked if we could spend some time with their officers. They put us in touch with two guys.
Right, these two officers, Officer Andre Lanier.
Say your name again.
Lanier.
And Delano Hutchins.
And actually, I think my mom got it after Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Here's a little taste of what it's like to be out on Skid Row with Officers Hutchins and Lanier.
Hey, how you doing today?
Hey, all right, how you
got? Oh, all right, good to see you.
Hey, how have you been?
What's going on?
What's up, baby girl? How you doing?
It's Officer Friendly and Officer Friendlier.
You know I'm going to have to pull that out, man.
Give me that, man.
Oh, he just grabbed his beer out of his bag and poured it out.
He caught you sleeping, huh?
All right, how you doing today?
Diane.
Checking if she's breathing.
You all right, sweetie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, how you doing,
sir? Doing wonderful.
Good to see you. Hey, she was looking for
me. I come for my lap dance.
You know I'll get my free.
Now, it's not just about glad handing. It's also about issuing citations and making arrests.
A lot of the police down on Skid Row, including two of the officers who shot that man earlier this month, are part of what's called the Safer Cities Initiative. This is a program that put 50 extra cops on the streets of Skid Row over the past several years.
The idea is to cite or arrest people for the little stuff, jaywalking, drinking in public, blocking sidewalks.
You know, that whole broken windows approach that was made famous by ex-New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
If you stop people from committing the little crimes,
they'll be less likely to commit the big crimes.
Any units in the area, 1412 East 1st Street?
We actually see this play out. Officers Lanier and Hutchins get a call from another police officer.
His name is Dion Joseph, and he's a pretty big proponent of safer cities.
We see him citing a guy for allegedly selling loose cigarettes, Lucy's.
He's not going to jail, but the next time he will go to jail.
And the guy, his name is Liddell Stuckey, is not happy.
I'm being harassed right now because he's seen me pick up my cigarettes off the ground. Just because you've seen me pick up my cigarettes don't necessarily mean that I'm selling cigarettes.
Next time I'm going to
be here every single day.
I know you will.
So get used to it. As soon as he let me go, I'm going to have go to the store and buy me some more cigarettes.
It might sound like Liddell Stuckey is just talking trash here, but 2 hours later, we walked right back past the same spot. Who do we see? Same dude, same spot, six more packs of cigarettes. Liddell Stuckey.
I know. I'm sorry, y'all. I apologize.
Come on.
The thing is, this time Hutchins and Lanier don't cite him, even though it looks like he's selling loose cigarettes again.
So you're giving them away for free, right?
Yeah, no. If you want one, you can have
it's
one.
Donation,
yeah,
right?
I'll set up a donation.
Uh-huh.
We walked down the block and asked Hutchins and Lanier why they didn't give the guy another citation or arrest him.
What do you think our biggest job is?
For him to not do that anymore.
No.
Really?
Is our big job to worry about him selling those cigarettes on the sidewalk? Our biggest job is safety.
Okay. If we just go out and then we just pounding everybody every second of the day, then we're not really doing our job, because now no one trusts us. You know, we can't solve those unsolved crimes because no one would talk to us about it.
So we have lots of extra police down on Skid Row. Some apply the Safer Cities approach, some don't.
But still, you have this divide between many of the people who live on Skid Row and the police.
We wanted to see how all this plays out at night.
People told us that's when more crime happens and when policing can be tougher.
And what we saw was a lot different. The plan was that I would spend the night with the police on the overnight shift.
Check, check, check. All right.
And on the same night, I would be out on the streets. Check, check, with the people who live on Skid Row. I don't know, but my guide is a guy who goes by the name TC.
I'll tell you, sister.
Yep.
I love Skid Row. Am I on?
Yes.
There's no people in this world more realer than people on Skid Row.
TC has lived on Skid Row off and on since the 80s. He used to be in a gang. He's a glad hander, too.
Hey, sister, how you doing? All right, baby girl.
He also volunteers for a group that organizes protests against police. How many times have you been arrested down here?
I got arrested 13 times in 2012.
For things like sleeping on the sidewalk, he says, or sitting on a crate. They say that the more you arrest people, you know, the more likely they are to change. Or maybe leave and go somewhere else.
Teach a lesson. Leave and go where?
Leave and go back home.
Go back to where they got ran away from. Go back to the same misery that they left. I find that ridiculous.
Walking down a dark side street, we meet a guy named KB, which he says stands for cowboy. He tells me the police stop him and handcuff him a lot, too.
Usually it's for a jaywalking or a drinking in public ticket, because that's all I do. Is drink in public, and sometimes I might jaywalk.
So how many times, like, this year have you been
probably
stopped?
About 10 times.
But KB has a different reaction to this than TC. He says getting stopped and arrested all these times actually changes the way he does things.
Yeah, it does in a certain way. It lets me know that I am being watched, and I need to straighten up my act, slow down on the alcohol and stuff like that, because I need to start respecting myself.
So it does change, so it makes you behave differently.
It gives me ideas to behave differently.
But KB says it still doesn't mean he's any closer to leaving Skid Row, or that he trusts the police to help make Skid Row a better place while he's there. One thing I keep hearing is that ever since police shot and killed Charlie Lindo Kanang, the man who went by the name Africa, a lot of people here are just mad. And the arrests and citations are making them more mad.
While Kelly's out with TC, I'm walking around with a couple different officers, including Michael Orozco.
You got 30 minutes, man, to get a light on that.
I was talking to a guy biking without a light on.
A little after the sun goes down, we walk past a group of men sitting on the sidewalk. One of the men has a closed red Nalgene bottle at his feet. Orozco stops to talk to him.
What's your name? Do I know you?
You don't know me.
Do me a favor, man. Stand up. Is that your bag? I'm going to grab this seat and come over here and sit down with me. I want to talk to you.
I ain't did nothing. What's the reason I do?
Orozco grabs a chair and the red Nalgene bottle, and they walk a few feet down the block, away from the other guys. The man sits in the chair. He gives his name as Terry Jackson, and he asks why he's been stopped.
It's because I believe this to be
an alcoholic container. Beer. It's closed.
Orozco opens the lid, and he and I can smell the beer.
Do me a favor, man. Stand up. I'm tired of you. I'm tired of your mouth.
Jackson stands up, face to the wall. Orozco puts him in handcuffs.
So check it out. You're going to get a ticket for that.
For what?
For that concealed.
It ain't even no can. It ain't even...
All right.
It's not even mine.
Okay.
At this point, more people start coming by, and Terry Jackson, the man being stopped for the alcohol, starts yelling. If it's not clear already, the police shooting earlier this month is on his mind.
You put these handcuffs on me all you want. What you want to do, beat me too? You want to shoot? You want to shoot? You want to shoot me?
By now, about five or six people have gathered around, taking videos on their cell phones, and the officers call for backup.
Yeah, call more backup, for y'all can kill somebody else.
A third officer pulls up in a patrol car, and things eventually calm down. Orozco uncuffs Jackson. He's not under arrest, but Orozco gives him a citation for an open container. And that was just one of the stops that night for the police.
You guys called?
Police get a call about one man who says he has depression and schizophrenia. He breaks a window at the building where he's staying.
Possibly suffering from a seizure.
Come on, man.
Police and paramedics see him, patch up his bloody hands, and release him.
You're gonna be all right, man.
So it's obviously not just crime that police have to deal with on Skid Row, but also people with mental illness and drug addiction.
Several people told us that's what the man who was shot by police earlier this month was dealing with.
So it's 1 a.m., and TC and I go back to the place where Africa was killed.
And some posters, and there's a poster.
It's also where Africa lived, in a tent. His friend, Mika Harper, runs a storefront church right there. She was outside the day Africa was shot.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, my God, when I see how many police officers was on him and they couldn't handle him. They couldn't handle him. Or is it that they couldn't handle their self?
I ask Mika what the police can do to regain the people's trust.
I don't think the people will ever trust him again. Honestly, I don't think that they will ever trust him again.
That sounds pretty bleak, but Mika does say one thing police could do is patrol Skid Row alongside mental health specialists who know how to deal with people like Africa.
It's funny, the police actually said this too.
Right. I mean, one officer told us they do walk around with mental health specialists about once a month. And he says he wishes they had the resources to do it more than that.
So it's about the end of shift. It's 2:30 a.m., and I'm in a police car.
I'm out in the streets with TC, and something happens.
Interview people and hear the real stuff. Okay, that was a gunshot.
I see a handful of people run away.
Kelly texts me about the gunshot. Then inside the police car, we hear about it on the radio.
Suspect is across the street, appearing to direct a male wearing a white T-shirt, black pants, and black shoes, armed with a gun and a knife.
Police dispatch four cars.
I saw those cars drive by.
A couple of the black and whites are kind of milling around.
Someone calls and says a security guard has been shot and stabbed at a shelter, but the shelter says no, everyone's fine.
All security guards are accounted for this time.
The police say they investigate the scene and get nothing.
But I'm at the shelter, and I don't see them get out of their cars or talk to anybody.
In the end, the police say, with no witnesses and no victims, there's no case.
This is the problem, some people on Skid Row say. This is that divide we were talking about. The police are supposed to protect and serve, they keep telling me. But then they're there when you don't need them, like busting you for jaywalking. And they're not there when you do need them, like investigating a potential violent crime like this one, or more sensitively handling a mental health crisis.
One police sergeant told me that people on Skid Row want it both ways. They want the police to stay away, to ignore the petty crimes, until the moment a gun goes off. They say they can't be everything to everybody. They're not social workers, they're not therapists, they're just the police.
Time to wake up, break down these tents.
A few hours later, it's 6 a.m., the sun's coming up, and the next shift of police are driving around.
Wake up. Wake up.
After six, it's illegal to have your tent set up on the sidewalk.
It's another one of those small crimes you can get cited for.
But the police don't always enforce that rule.
Get up, bring down your tent.
Some people are out and haven't even gone to sleep yet.
Other people are about to start another day.